I fear my deterioration will increase. I've seen similar things happen to people in my hospitals.
But he held Dalinar's arm as they walked toward the doorway. Outside, Dalinar collected some guards of his own, along with Taravangian's large Thalen bodyguard. They started toward the lifts.
"Do you know," Dalinar said, "if there's word?"
"From Kolinar?"
Taravangian asked. Dalinar nodded. He vaguely remembered updates from Navani. No news of Adolin, Elokar, or the Radiance. But had he been of sound enough mind to listen?
"I'm sorry, Dalinar,"
Taravangian said.
"So far as I know, we haven't had a message from them. But we must keep hope, of course. They might have lost their span reed or gotten trapped in the city."
"I may have felt something," the Stormfather said. "During a recent high storm, it felt like Stormblessed was there with me. I do not know what it means, for I cannot see him or the others anywhere. I presumed them dead, but now I find myself believing."
"Why?"
"You have hope," Dalinar whispered, smiling.
"Dalinar?"
Taravangian asked.
"Just whispering to myself, Your Majesty."
"If I might say, you seem stronger today. You've decided something?"
"More. I've remembered something."
"Is it something you can share with a worried old man?"
"Not yet. I'll try to explain once I have it figured out myself."
After an extended trip up the lifts, Dalinar led Taravangian into a quiet, windowless chamber on the penultimate floor of the tower. They dubbed it the Gallery of Maps, after a similar location in the war camps. Aladar led the meeting, standing beside a table that was covered by a large map of Alethkar and Yakaved. The dark-skinned Alethi man wore his war uniform, the mix of a traditional Takama shirt and modern jacket that had been catching on among his officers. His bodyguard, Mintez, stood behind him in full shard plate. Aladar preferred not to use the shards personally. He was a general, not a warrior. He nodded to Dalinar and Taravangian when they entered. Iale sat nearby and studied Dalinar, saying nothing. He'd almost have welcomed a wisecrack. In the old days, she'd been quick to joke with him. Her silence now didn't mean she was being respectful. It meant she was saving her barbs to whisper where he couldn't hear. High Prince Ruthar, thick-armed and wearing a full beard, sat with Iale. He'd opposed Dalinar from the start. The other Alethi High Prince who had come today was Hatham, a long-necked man with light orange eyes. He wore a red and gold uniform of a type that Dalinar hadn't seen before, with a short jacket that buttoned only at the top. Silly-looking, but what did Dalinar know of fashion? The man was extremely polite, and he ran a tight army. Queen Fen had brought the Thalen High Admiral, a scrawny old man with mustaches that drooped almost to the table. He wore a short sailor's saber and sash, and looked like exactly the type who would complain about being stuck on the land for too long. She'd also brought her son, the one Dalinar had dueled, who saluted Dalinar sharply. Dalinar saluted back. That boy would make an excellent officer, if he could learn to keep his temper. The Azish Emperor wasn't there, nor was their little edge dancer. Instead, Azir had sent a collection of scholars. Azish generals tended to be of the armchair type, military historians and theorists who spent their days in books. Dalinar was certain they had men with practical knowledge in their military, but those rarely ended up promoted. So long as you failed certain tests, you could remain in the field and command. Dalinar had met the two Vaden High Princes during his trip to their city. The brothers were tall, prim men with short black hair and uniforms much like those of the Alethi. Taravangian had appointed them after their predecessors had been poisoned following the civil war. Yakaved obviously still had many problems.
"Dalinar?"
Aladar said. He stood up straighter, then saluted.
"Right, Lord. You're looking better."
Storms, how much did the rest of them know?
I've spent some time in meditation, Dalinar said. I see you've been busy. Tell me about the defensive array.
Well, Aladar said, we...
That's it, Queen Fen interrupted. What in damnation was wrong with you? You ran all around Vedinar like a wild man, then locked yourself in your room for a week.
I was excommunicated from the Boren Church soon after hearing of Kolinar's fall. I took it poorly. Did you expect me to react by throwing a feast?
I expected you to lead us, not sulk.
I deserved that. You are right. You can't have a commander who refuses to command. I'm sorry.
The Azish whispered among themselves, looking surprised at the bluntness of the exchange. But Fen settled back, and Aladar nodded. Dalinar's mistakes had needed to be aired. Aladar began explaining their battle preparations. The Azish generals, all wearing robes and western hats, crowded around, offering commentary through translators. Dalinar used a little stormlight and touched one on the arm to gain access to their language for a short time. He found their advice surprisingly astute, considering that they were basically a committee of scribes. They'd moved 10 battalions of Alethi troops through the Oath Gates, along with 5 battalions of Azish. That put 15,000 men on the ground in Yakaved, including some of their most loyal Kolin and Aladar forces. That seriously cut into his troop numbers. Storms, they'd lost so many at Narak. The companies that Dalinar had remaining at Urethiru were mostly recruits or men from other princedoms who had asked to join his military. Sabario, for example, had cut back to maintaining only a single division, giving Dalinar the rest to wear Kolin colors. Dalinar had interrupted a discussion of how to fortify the Yakaved border. He offered some insights, but mostly listened as they explained their plans. Stockpiles here, garrisons there. They hoped the Windrunners would be able to scout for them. Dalinar nodded, but found that something bothered him about this battle plan. A problem he couldn't define. They'd done well, their lines of supply had been drawn realistically, and their scout posts were spaced for excellent coverage. What then was wrong? The door opened, revealing Navani, who froze when she saw Dalinar, then melted into a relieved smile. He nodded to her as one of the Vaden High Princes explained why they shouldn't abandon the backwater strip of land running east of the Horneater Peaks. Aladar had been ready to cede it, and use the peaks as a barrier.
"It's not only about the opportunity to levy troops from His Majesty's Horneater subjects, Bright Lord," the High Prince, Nan-Yurion, explained in Alethi. "These lands are lush and well-appointed, buffered from storms by the very Alethi highlands you've been speaking of. We've always fought desperately for them against invasions, because they will succor those who seize them, and provide staging areas for assaults on the rest of Yakaved."
Dalinar grunted. Navani stepped over to where most of them stood around the table map, so he reached out and put his arm around her waist.
"He's right, Aladar. I spent a long time skirmishing on that very border. That area is more important strategically than it first appears."
"Holding it is going to be tough," Aladar said. "We'll get mired in an extended battle for that ground." "Which is what we want, isn't it?" the Vaden High Prince said. "The longer we stall the invasion, the more time it will give my Vaden brethren to recover."
"Yes," Dalinar said. "Yes."
It was easy to get mired in battles along the vast Vaden front. How many years had he spent fighting false bandits there?
"Let's take a break. I want to consider this."
The others seemed to welcome the opportunity. Many stepped into the larger chamber outside, where attendants with span reeds waited to relay information. Navani stayed beside Dalinar as he surveyed the map.
"It's good to see you up," she whispered.
"You're more patient than I deserve. You should have dumped me out of bed and poured the wine on my head."
"I had a feeling you'd push through."
"I have for now," he said. "In the past, a few days or even weeks of sobriety didn't mean much."
"You're not the man you were back then."
Oh, Nabani, I never grew beyond that man. I just hid him away. He couldn't explain that to her yet. Instead, he whispered thanks into her ear and rested his hand on hers. How could he ever have been frustrated at her advances? For now, he turned his attention to the maps and lost himself in them. The fortresses, the storm bunkers, the cities, the drawn-in supply lines. What's wrong? Dalinar thought. What am I not seeing? 10 silver kingdoms, 10 oath gates, the keys to this war. Even if the enemy can't use them, they can hinder us by seizing them. One in Alethkar, which they already have. One in Natanatan. The Shattered Plains, which we have. One in Vedanar, one in Azimir, one in Thalen City. All 3 hours. But one in Ral Elorim and one in Kurth, both the enemies by now. One in Shinovar, belonging to neither side. That left the one in Penatham, in Babatharnam, which the combined Iriale and Riran armies might have captured already, and one in Akana, which Yasna was confident had been destroyed long ago. Yaakoved made the most sense for the enemy to attack, didn't it? Only, once you engaged yourself in Yaakoved, you were stuck fighting a long war of attrition. You lost mobility, had to dedicate enormous resources to it. He shook his head, feeling frustrated. He left the map, trailed by Navani, and stepped into the other room for refreshment. At the wine table, he forced himself to pour a warm, spiced orange. Something with no kick. Yasna joined the group, delivering a stack of papers to her mother.
May I see?
Ile asked.
No,
Yasna replied. Dalinar hid a smile in his drink.
What secrets are you keeping?
Ile asked.
What happened to your uncle's grand talk of unification?
I suspect that each monarch in this room, Yasna said, would prefer to know that state secrets are allowed to remain their own. This is an alliance, not a wedding.
Queen Fen nodded at that.
As for these papers, Yasna continued, they happen to be a scholarly report which my mother has not yet reviewed. We will release what we discover once we are certain that our translations are correct and that nothing in these notes might give our enemies an advantage against this city.
Yasna cocked an eyebrow.
Or would you prefer our scholarship be sloppy?
The Azish seemed mollified by this.
I just think, Ile said, you showing up here with them is a slap in the face for the rest of us.
Ile, Yasna said, it is good you are here. Sometimes an intelligent, dissenting voice tests and proves a theory. I do wish you'd work harder on the intelligent part.
Dalinar downed the rest of his drink and smiled as Ile settled back in her chair, wisely not escalating a verbal battle against Yasna. Unfortunately, Ruthar did not have similar sense.
Don't mind her, Ile, he said, mustache wet with wine. The godless have no concept of proper decency. Everyone knows that the only reason to abandon belief in the Almighty is so that you can explore vice.
Oh, Ruthar, Dalinar thought, you can't win this fight. Yasna has thought about the topic far more than you have. It's a familiar battleground to her. Storms. That was it.
They aren't going to attack Yaakoved,
Dalinar shouted, interrupting Yasna's rebuttal. Those in the room turned to him, surprised, Yasna's mouth half open.
Dalinar? High Prince Aladar asked. We decided that Yaakoved was the most likely...
No, Dalinar said. No! We know the terrain too well. The Alethi and the Vedans have spent generations fighting over that land.
What then?
Yasna asked. Dalinar ran back into the map room. The others fluttered in around him.
They went to Marat, right?
Dalinar asked.
They cut through Emul and into Marat, silencing Spanreeds nationwide. Why? Why go there?
Azir was too well fortified, Aladar said. From Marat, the Voidbringers can strike at Yaakoved from both the west and the east.
Through the bottleneck in Triax?
Dalinar asked.
We talk of Yaakoved's weakness, but that's relative.
They still have a huge standing army, strong fortifications. If the enemy wades into Yakoved now, while solidifying their own power, it will drain their resources and stall their conquest. That isn't what they want right now, when they still have the upper hand in momentum.
Where, then?
Non-Urien asked.
A place that was hit hardest of all by the new storms, Dalinar said, pointing at the map. A place whose military might was severely undermined by the Everstorm. A place with an oath gate.
Queen Fenn gasped, safe hand going to her lips.
Thalen City?
Navani asked.
Are you sure?
If the enemy takes Thalen City, Dalinar said, they can blockade Yakoved, Karbranth, and what few lands in Alethkar we still own. They can seize command of the entire southern depths and launch naval assaults on Tashik and Shinovar. They could swarm New Natnan and have a position from which to assault the Shattered Plains. Strategically, Thalen City is far more important than Yakoved, but at the same time, far worse defended.
But they'd need ships, Aladar said.
The Parshmen took our fleet, Fenn said.
After that first terrible storm, Dalinar said, how were there any ships left for them to take?
Fenn frowned.
As I think about it, that's remarkable, isn't it? There were dozens remaining, as if the winds left them alone, because the enemy needed them.
Storms. I've been thinking too much like an Alethi, Dalinar said. Boots on stone, but the enemy moved into Marat immediately, a perfect position from which to launch at Thalen City.
We need to revise our plans, Ben said.
Peace, Your Majesty, Aladar said. We have armies in Thalen City already. Good Alethi troops. Nobody is better on the ground than Alethi infantry.
We have three divisions there right now, Dalinar said. We'll want at least three more.
Sir, Fenn's son said. Bright Lord, that's not enough.
Dalinar glanced at Fenn. Her wizened admiral nodded.
Speak, Dalinar said.
Sir, the youth said, we're glad to have your troops on the island. Collects breath. If you're going to get into a fight, you definitely want the Alethi on your side. But an enemy fleet is a much larger problem than you're assuming. One you can't easily fix by moving troops around. If the enemy ships find Thalen City well defended, they'll just sail on and attack Karbranth or Dumedari, or any number of defenseless cities along the coast.
Dalinar grunted. He did think too much like an Alethi.
What then?
We need our own fleet, obviously, Fenn's admiral said.
He had a thick accent of mushed syllables, like a mouthful of moss.
But most of our ships were lost to the blustering Everstorm. Half were abroad, caught unaware. My colleagues now dance upon the bottom of the depths.
And the rest of your fleet was stolen, Dalinar said with a grunt. What else do we have?
His Majesty Taravangian has ships at our port,
the Vaden High Prince said. All eyes turned toward Taravangian.
Merchant ships only,
the old man said.
Vessels that carried my healers. We haven't a true navy, but I did bring 20 ships. I could perhaps provide 10 more from Karbranth.
The storm took a number of our ships, the Vaden High Prince said. But the civil war was more devastating. We lost hundreds of sailors. We have more ships than we have crew for right now.
Ben joined Dalinar beside the map.
We might be able to scrape together a semblance of a navy to intercept the enemy, but the fighting will be on the decks of ships. We'll need troops.
You'll have them, Dalinar said.
Alethi, who've never seen a rough sea in their lives?
Ben asked, skeptical. She looked to the Azish generals.
Tashik has a navy, doesn't it? Staffed and supplemented by Azish troops?
The generals conferred in their own language. Finally, one spoke through an interpreter.
The 13th Battalion, Red and Gold, has men who do a rotation on ships and patrol the Grand Waterway. Getting others here would take much time, but the 13th is already stationed in Yakoved.
We'll supplement them with some of my best men, Dalinar said.
Storms, we need those windrunners active.
Fenn, would your admirals present a suggested course for the gathering and deployment of a unified fleet?
Sure,
the short woman said. She leaned in, speaking under her breath.
I warn you, many of my sailors follow the passions. You're going to have to do something about these claims of heresy, Blackthorn. Already there's talk among my people that this is, at long last, the right time for the Thalens to break free from the Vorin Church.
I won't recant, Dalinar said.
Even if it causes a wholesale religious collapse in the middle of a war?
He didn't reply, and she let him withdraw from the table, thinking about other plans. He spoke with the others about various items, thanked Navani, again, for holding everything together. Then eventually he decided to go back down below and take a few reports from his stewards. On his way out he passed Heravangian, who had taken a seat by the wall. The old man looked distracted by something.
Heravangian, Dalinar said. We'll leave troops in Yakoved, too, in case I'm wrong. Don't worry.
The old man looked to Dalinar, then strangely wiped tears from his eyes.
Are you in pain? Dalinar asked.
Yes, but it is nothing you can fix.
He hesitated.
You are a good man, Dalinar Cullen. I did not expect that.
Ashamed by that, Dalinar hurried from the room, followed by his guards. He felt tired, which seemed unfair, considering he'd just spent a week basically sleeping. Before seeking his stewards, Dalinar stopped on the fourth floor from the bottom. An extended walk from the lifts took him to the outer wall of the tower, where a small series of rooms smelled of incense. People lined the hallways, waiting for glyph wards or to speak with an ardent. More than he'd expected, but then they didn't have much else to do, did they?
Is that how you think of them already? A part of him asked. Only here to seek spiritual welfare because they don't have anything better to do?
Dalinar kept his chin high, resisting the urge to shrink before their stares. He passed several ardents and stepped into a room lit and warmed by braziers, where he asked after Kadash. He was directed onto a garden balcony where a small group of ardents was trying to farm. Some placed seed paste, while others were trying to get some shale bark starters to take along the wall. An impressive project, and one he didn't remember ordering them to begin. Kadash was quietly chipping creme off a planter box. Dalinar settled down beside him. The scarred ardent glanced at him and kept working.
"It's very late coming," Dalinar said. "But I want to apologize to you for Rathalas."
"I don't think I'm the one you need to apologize to," Kadash said. "Those who could bear an apology are now in the Tranquiline Halls."
"Still, I made you a part of something terrible."
"I chose to be in your army," Kadash said. "I've found peace with what we did. Found it among the Ardents, where I no longer shed the blood of men. I suppose it would be foolish of me to suggest the same to you."
Dalinar took a deep breath.
"I'm releasing you and the other Ardents from my control. I won't put you in a position where you have to serve a heretic. I'll give you to Heravangian, who remains Orthodox."
"No.
I don't believe you have the option to..."
"Just listen for one storming moment, Dalinar,"
Kadash snapped. Then he sighed, forcibly calming himself.
"You assume that because you're a heretic, we don't want anything to do with you."
"You proved that a few weeks ago when we dueled."
"We don't want to normalize what you've done or what you're saying. That doesn't mean we will abandon our posts. Your people need us, Dalinar, even if you believe you don't."
Dalinar walked to the edge of the garden, where he rested his hands on the stone railing. Beyond him, clouds mustered at the base of the peaks like a phalanx protecting its commander. From up here, it looked like the entire world was nothing more than an ocean of white broken by sharp peaks. His breath puffed in front of him, cold as the frostlands, though it didn't seem as bad inside the tower.
"Are any of those plants growing?" he asked softly.
"No," Kadash said from behind. "We aren't sure if it's the cold or the fact that few storms reach this high."
He kept scraping.
"What will it feel like when a storm goes high enough to engulf this entire tower?"
"Like we're surrounded by dark confusion," Dalinar said. The only light coming in flashes we can't pinpoint or comprehend. Angry winds trying to tow us in a dozen different directions, or barring that, rip our limbs from our bodies. He looked toward Kadash. Like always.
The Almighty was a constant light.
And?
And now you make us question. You make me question. Being an Ardent is the only thing that lets me sleep at night, Dalinar. You want to take that from me, too? If he's gone, there's only the storm.
I think there must be something beyond. I asked you before, what did worship look like before Vorinism? What did...
Dalinar, please,
just stop. Kadash drew in a deep breath. Release a statement. Don't let everyone keep whispering about how you went into hiding. Say something pedantic like, I'm pleased with the work the Vorin Church does and support my Ardens if I myself no longer have the faith I once did. Give us permission to move on. Storms, this isn't the time for confusion. We don't even know what we're fighting.
Kadash didn't want to know that Dalinar had met the thing they were fighting. Best not to speak of that. But Kadash's question did leave him considering. Odium wouldn't be commanding the day-to-day operations of his army, would he? Who did that? The Fused? The Voidspren? Dalinar strolled a short distance from Kadash, then looked toward the sky.
Stormfather? He asked. Do the enemy forces have a king or a high prince? Maybe a head ardent? Someone other than Odium?
The Stormfather rumbled.
Again, I do not see as much as you think I do. I am the passing storm, the winds of the tempest. All of this is me. But I am not all of it, any more than you control each breath that leaves your mouth.
Dalinar sighed. It had been worth the thought.
There is one I have been watching, the Stormfather added. I can see her when I don't see others.
A leader? Dalinar asked.
Maybe. Men, both human and singer, are strange in what or whom they revere. Why do you ask?
Dalinar had decided not to bring anyone else into one of the visions because he worried about what Odium would do to them. But that wouldn't count for people already serving Odium, would it?
When is the next high storm?
Teravangian felt old. His age was more than the aches that no longer faded as the day proceeded. It was more than the weak muscles which still surprised him when he tried to lift an object that should have seemed light. It was more than finding that he'd slept through yet another meeting, despite his best efforts to pay attention. It was even more than slowly seeing almost everyone he'd grown up with fade away and die. It was the urgency of knowing that tasks he started today, he wouldn't finish. He stopped in the hallway back to his rooms, hand resting on the strata-lined wall. It was beautiful, mesmerizing. But he only found himself wishing for his gardens in Carbranth. Other men and women got to live out their waning hours in comfort, or at least familiarity. He let Maral take him by the arm and guide him to his rooms. Normally, Teravangian would have been bothered by the help. He did not like being treated like an invalid. Today, though? Well, today he would suffer the indignity. It was a lesser one than collapsing in the hallway. Inside the room, Adrutagia sat amid 6 different scribbling span reeds, buying and trading information like a merchant at market. She looked at him, but knew him well enough not to comment on his exhausted face or slow steps. Today was a good day of average intelligence, perhaps a little on the stupid side, but he'd take that. He seemed to be having fewer and fewer intelligent days, and the ones he did have frightened him. Teravangian settled down in a plush, comfortable seat, and Mabin went to get him some tea. Well? Adrutagia asked. She'd grown old, too, with enormous bags around her green eyes, the persistent kind formed by drooping skin. She had liver spots and wispy hair. No man would look at her and see the mischievous child she'd once been. The trouble the two of them had gotten into.
Varko? Adratagia asked.
My apologies, he said. Dalinar Kholin has recovered.
A problem?
An enormous one.
Taravangian took the tea from Mabin.
More than you can guess, I should say, even with the diagram before you. But please, give me time to consider. My mind is slow today. Have you reports?
Adratagia flipped over a paper from one of her stacks.
Murloc seems to have settled in the Horn-Eater Peaks. Yoshur is on his way there now. We might again soon have access to the death rattles.
Very well.
We've found what happened to Graves, Adratagia continued. Scavengers found the storm-blown wreckage of his wagon, and there was an intact span reed inside.
Graves is replaceable.
And the shards?
Irrelevant,
Taravangian said.
We won't win the prize through force of arms. I was reluctant to let him try his little coup in the first place.
He and Graves had disagreed about the diagram's instructions, to kill Dalinar or recruit him, and who was to be king of Alethkar. While Taravangian had been wrong about the diagram himself many times, so he'd allowed Graves to move forward with his own plots, according to his own readings of the diagram. While the man's schemes had failed, so had Taravangian's attempt to have Dalinar executed. So perhaps neither of them had read the diagram correctly. He took some time to recover, frustrated that he should need to recover from a simple walk. A few minutes later, the guard admitted Malata. The Radiant wore her usual skirt and leggings, Thalen style, with thick boots. She took a seat across from Taravangian at the low table, then sighed in a melodramatic way.
This place is awful. Every last idiot here is frozen, ears to toes.
Had she been this confident before bonding a Spren? Taravangian hadn't known her well then. Oh, he'd managed the project, full of eager recruits from the diagram, but the individuals hadn't mattered to him. Until now.
Your Spren, Adratagia asked, getting out a sheet of paper. Has she anything to report?
No, Malata said. Only the tidbit from earlier about other visions Dalinar hasn't shared with everyone.
And,
Taravangian asked,
has the Spren expressed any reservations about the work you've given her?
Damnation, Malata said, rolling her eyes. You're as bad as Kholin's scribes, always poking.
We need to be cautious, Malata, Taravangian said. We can't be certain what your Spren will do as her self-awareness grows. She will surely dislike working against the other orders.
You're as frozen as the lot of them, Malata said.
She started glowing, stormlight rising from her skin. She reached forward, whipping off her glove, safe hand, no less, and pressing it against the table. Marks spread out from the point of contact, little swirls of blackness etching themselves into the wood. The scent of burning filled the air, but the flames didn't persist if she didn't will them to. The swirls and lines extended across the tabletop, a masterwork of engraving accomplished in moments. Malata blew off the ash. The surge she used, division, caused objects to degrade, burn, or turn to dust. It also worked on people.
Spark is fine with what we're doing, Malata said, pressing her finger down and adding another swirl to the table. I told you the rest of them are idiots. They assume all the Spren are going to be on their side. Never mind what the Radiance did to Spark's friends, never mind that organized devotion to honor is what killed hundreds of Ash Spren in the first place.
And Odium?
Taravangian asked, curious. The diagram warned that the personalities of the Radiance would introduce great uncertainty to their plans.
Spark is game for whatever it takes to get vengeance, and what lets her break stuff,
Malata grinned.
Someone should have warned me how fun this would be. I'd have tried way harder to land the job.
What we do is not fun,
Terabangian said.
It is necessary, but it is horrible. In a better world, Graves would have been right. We would be allies to Dalinar Kholin.
You're too fond of the Blackthorn Vargo, Adratagia warned. It will cloud your mind.
No, but I do wish I hadn't gotten to know him. That will make this difficult.
Terabangian leaned forward, holding his warm drink. Boiled Ingo tea with mint. Smells of home. With a start, he realized he'd probably never live in that home again, would he? He'd thought perhaps he would return in a few years. He wouldn't be alive in a few years.
Adro,
he continued,
Dalinar's recovery convinces me we must take more drastic action. Are the secrets ready?
Almost, she said, moving some other papers. My scholars in Yakaved have translated the passages we need, and we have the information from Malata's spying. But we need some way to disseminate the information without compromising ourselves.
Assign it to Dova,
Terabangian said.
Have her write a scathing, anonymous essay, then leak it to Tashik. Leak the translations from the Dawn Chant the same day. I want it all to strike at once.
He set aside the tea. Suddenly, a sense of Carbranth made him hurt.
It would have been so much better for Dalinar to have died by the assassin's blade. For now, we must leave him to the enemy's desires, and that will not be as kind as a quick death.
Will it be enough? Malata asked. That old axe-hound is tough.
It will be enough. Dalinar would be the first to tell you that when your opponent is getting back up, you must act quickly to crush his knees. Then he will bow and present you his skull. Oh, Dalinar, you poor, poor man.
Shallan's Sketchbook. Shadesmar, Spren. It seems that the Spren we see in our physical world are only partial manifestations of more complex beings that are part of an entire ecosystem of their own. I could spend another lifetime studying these Spren alone. Anticipation Spren. These are surprisingly stealthy and can sense your anticipation from a great distance. Fear Spren. We saw many of these. They are tenacious. Drawing is easy. Clearly it isn't. 108. Honor's Path. Shemoarish, the Dust Mother, has some of the most varied lore surrounding her. The wealth of it makes sorting lies from truths extremely difficult. I do believe she is not the Night Watcher, contrary to what some stories claim. From Hesse's Mythica, page 231. Shallan sketched in her notepad as she stood on the deck of the Honor Spren ship, the wind of its passing ruffling her hair. Next to her, Kaladin rested his arms on the ship's railing, overlooking the ocean of beads. Their current vessel, Honor's Path, was faster than Eco's merchant ship. It had mandras rigged not only at the front, but also to wing-like rails jutting from the sides. It had 5 decks, including 3 below for crew and storage, but those were mostly empty. It felt like a war vessel intended to carry troops, but which didn't currently have a full complement. The main deck was similar to the top deck of human ships, but this craft also had a high deck running down its center from prow to stern. Narrower than the main deck, it was supported by broad white pillars and probably offered an excellent view. Shallan could no more than guess, as only the crew was allowed up there. At least they'd been let out. Shallan and the others had spent their first week on board, locked in the hold. The Honor Spren had given no explanation when, finally, the humans and Pattern had been released and allowed to move on deck, so long as they stayed off the high deck and did not make nuisances of themselves. Syl remained imprisoned. "Look here." Shallan tipped her sketched map toward Caladan. "Pattern says there's an honor spren stronghold near Carbranth in our world. They call it Unyielding Fidelity. We've got to be heading there. We went southwest after leaving Celebrant." "While we were in the hold," Caladan said softly, "I saw a sea of tiny flames through the porthole. A town on our side?" "That was here," Shallan said, pointing at her map. "See where the rivers meet, just southwest of the lake? There are towns there, on our side. The river peninsulas should have blocked our way, but the Spren seemed to have cut a canal through the stone. We wove east around the Isingway River, then swung west again."
"So you're saying..."
She pointed at a spot with her charcoal pencil. "We're right about here, heading toward Carbranth across the Frostlands." Caladan rubbed his chin. He glanced toward an honor spren passing above and narrowed his eyes. He'd spent their first day of freedom arguing with the honor spren, which had ended with him locked up for another 2 days. "Caladan," Shallan said.
"They need to let her out," he said. "Prisons are terrible for me. They'll be worse for her."
"Then help me figure out a way off this ship." He looked back at her map and pointed.
"Thalen City," he said. "If we continue this direction, we'll eventually pass just north of it."
"Just north in this case meaning more than 300 miles away from it in the middle of a bead ocean."
"Far closer than we've been to any other oath gate," he said. "And if we can get the ship to swing south a little, we could maybe get to the coast of Longbrow's Straits, which will be stone on this side. Or do you think we should still be trying for Azure's phantom perpendicularity in the Horneater Peaks?"
He spoke with such authority, such a compelling sense of motion. "I don't know, Caladan."
"We're heading in the right direction," he said, firm. "I saw it, Shallan. We just need to continue with the ship a few more days, then find a way to escape. We can hike to the Oathgate on this side, and you can transfer us to Thalen City."
It sounded reasonable. Well, except for the fact that the Honor Spren were watching them, and the fact that the Fused knew where they were now, and were probably gathering forces to give chase, and the fact that they had to somehow escape from a ship in the middle of a sea of beads, reach the shore, then hike 200 miles to reach Thalen City. All of that could fade before Kaladin's passion. All but the worry that topped them all. Could she even make the Oath Gate work? She couldn't help feeling that too much of this plan depended on her.
Yet those eyes... "We could try a mutiny," Vale said. "Maybe those Mist Spren who do all the work will listen. They can't be happy, always hopping about, following Honor Spren orders."
"I don't know," Caladan said, voice hushing as one of these Spren, made entirely of mist, save for the hands and face, walked past.
"Could be reckless. I can't fight them all." "What if you had Stormlight?" Vale asked. "If I could pinch it back for you. What then?"
He rubbed at his chin again. Storms, he looked good with a beard. All ragged and untamed through the face, contrasted by his sharp blue uniform. Like a wild spren of passion, trapped by the oaths and codes. Wait, had that been Vale? Shallan shook free of the momentary drifting of personality. Caladan didn't seem to notice.
"Maybe," he said. "You really think you can steal the gemstones back for us? I'd feel a lot more comfortable with some Stormlight in my pocket."
Shallan swallowed. "Caladan, I don't know if... Maybe it would be best not to fight them. They're honor spren.
They're jailers," he said, but then calmed. "But they are taking us the right direction, if only inadvertently. What if we stole back our Stormlight, then simply jumped off the ship?" Can you find a bead to make us a passage toward land like you did at Kolinor?
I guess I could try. But wouldn't the honor spren simply swing around and pick us up again?
I'll think about that, Kaladin said. Try and find some beads that we can use.
He walked across the deck, passing by Pattern, who stood with hands clasped behind his back, thinking number-filled thoughts. Kaladin eventually settled beside Azure, speaking softly with her, probably outlining their plan. Such that it was. Shallan tucked her sketchpad under her arm and looked over the side of the ship. So many beads, so many souls, piled on top of each other. Kaladin wanted her to search through all of that for something helpful? She glanced toward a passing sailor, a mist spren who had gaseous limbs that ended in gloved hands. Her feminine face was the shape of a porcelain mask, and she, like the others of her kind, wore a vest and trousers that seemed to float on a body made of swirling, indistinct fog. "Is there a way for me to get some of those beads?" Shallan asked. The mist spren stopped in place. "Please?" Shallan asked. The sailor jogged off, and then returned a short time later with the captain, a tall, imperious-looking honor spren named Notum. He glowed a soft blue-white and wore an outdated but sharp naval uniform, which was part of his substance. His beard was of a cut she hadn't seen before, with the chin shaved, almost like a horn-eater, but with a thin mustache and a sculpted line of hair that ran from it up his cheeks and blended into his sideburns.
"You have a request?"
he asked her. "I would like some beads, Captain," Shallan said. "To practice my art, if you please. I need to do something to pass the time on this trip."
"Manifesting random souls is dangerous, Lightweaver. I would not have you doing it wantonly upon my decks."
Keeping the true nature of her order from him had proven impossible, considering how Pattern followed her around. "I promise not to manifest anything," she said. "I merely want to practice visualizing the souls inside the beads. It's part of my training." He studied her, clasping his hands behind his back.
"Very well," he said, which surprised her. She hadn't expected that to work.
He gave an order, however, and a mist spren lowered a bucket on a rope to get her some beads.
"Thank you," Shallan said. "It was a simple request," the captain said. "Just be careful. I suppose you'd need Stormlight to manifest anyway, but still, be careful."
"What happens if we carry the beads away too far?" Shallan asked, curious as the mist spren handed her the bucket. "They are tied to objects in the physical realm, right?"
"You can carry them anywhere in Shadesmar you wish," the captain said. "Their tie is through the spiritual realm, and distance doesn't matter. However, drop them, let them free, and they'll work their way back to the general location of their physical counterpart."
He eyed her.
"You are very new to all of this. When did it begin again? Radiance? Swearing ideals?"
"Well," her mother's dead face, eyes burned. "It hasn't been going on for long," Shallan said. "A few months for most of us. A few years for some."
"We had hoped this day would never come."
He turned to march toward the high deck. "Captain," Shallan asked, "why did you let us out? If you're so worried about radiance, why not just keep us locked away?"
"It wasn't honorable," the captain said. "You are not prisoners."
"What are we then?"
"Stormfather only knows. Fortunately, I don't have to sort it out. We'll deliver you and the ancient daughter to someone with more authority. Until then, please try not to break my ship."
As days passed, Shallan fell into a routine on the Honor Spren ship. She spent most days sitting on the main deck, near the whale. They let her have beads in plenitude to play with, but most of them were useless things. Rocks, sticks, bits of clothing. Still, it was useful to visualize them, hold them, meditate on them, understand them. Objects had desires. Simple desires, true, but they could adhere to those desires with passion, as she'd learned during her few attempts at soul casting. Now she didn't try to change those desires. She just learned to touch them and to listen. She felt a familiarity to some of the beads, a growing understanding that, perhaps, she could make their souls blossom from beads into full-fledged objects on this side, manifestations they were called. Between practices with the beads, she did sketches. Some worked, some didn't. She wore the skirt that Adolin had purchased for her, hoping it would make her feel more like Shallan. Vale kept poking through, which could be useful, but the way it just kind of happened was frightening to her. This was the opposite of what Wit had told her to do, wasn't it? Kaladin spent the days pacing the main deck, glaring at Honor Spren he passed. He looked like a caged beast. Shallan felt some of his same urgency. They hadn't seen any sign of the enemy, not since that day in Celebrant. But she slept uneasily each night, worried that she'd wake to calls of an enemy ship approaching them. Notum had confirmed that the Voidspren were creating their own empire in Shadesmar, and they controlled cultivation's perpendicularity, the easiest way to get between realms. Shallan sorted through another handful of beads, feeling the impression of a small dagger, a rock, a piece of fruit that had started to see itself as something new, something that could grow into its own identity, rather than merely a part of the whole. What would someone see when looking at her soul? Would it give a single, unified impression? Many different ideas of what it was to be her? Nearby, the ship's first mate, an Honor Spren woman with short hair and an angular face, left the hold. Curiously, she was carrying Azure's shard blade. She stepped onto the main deck beneath the shadow of the high deck and went hiking toward Azure, who stood watching the ocean pass nearby. Curious, Shallan pocketed the bead representing a knife, just in case, then left the bucket on top of her sketchbook and walked over. Nearby, Kaladin was pacing again, and he also noticed the sword. "Draw her carefully," Azure said to Berea, the first mate, as Shallan approached. "Don't pull her out all the way. She doesn't know you." Berea wore a uniform like the captain's, all stiff and no-nonsense. She undid a small latch on the shard blade, eased it from its sheath a half inch, then drew in a sharp breath. "It tingles." "She's investigating you," Azure said. "It really is as you say," Berea said. "A shard blade that requires no spren, no enslavement. This is something else. How did you do it?" "I will trade knowledge per our deal once we arrive." Berea snapped the blade closed. "A good bond, human. We accept your offer." Surprisingly, the woman held the weapon toward Azure, who took it. Shallan stepped closer, watching as Berea walked off toward the steps up to the high deck. "How?" Shallan asked, as Azure belted on the sword. "You got them to give your weapon back?"
"They're quite reasonable," Azure said, "so long as you make the right promises. I've negotiated for passage and an exchange of information, once we reach lasting integrity."
"You've done what?" Kaladin said. He stalked over. "What did I just hear?"
"I've made a deal, Stormblessed," Azure said, meeting his gaze. "I'll be free once we reach their stronghold."
"We're not going to reach their stronghold," Kaladin said softly. We're going to escape.
I'm not your soldier, or even Adolin's subject. I'm going to do what gets me to the perpendicularity, and barring that, I'm going to find out what these people know about the criminal I'm hunting.
You'd throw away honor for a bounty?
I'm only here because you two, through no fault of your own, I admit, trapped me. I don't blame you, but I'm also not indebted to your mission.
Traitor, he said softly.
Azure gave him a flat look. At some point, Cal, you need to admit that the best thing you can do right now is go with these Spren. At their stronghold, you could clear up this misunderstanding, then move on.
That could take weeks.
I wasn't aware we were on a schedule. Dalinar is in danger.
Don't you care
about a man I don't know? Azure said. In danger from a threat you can't define, happening at a time you can't pinpoint? She folded her arms. Forgive me for not sharing in your anxiety.
Kaladin set his jaw, then turned and stalked away, right up the steps toward the high deck. They weren't supposed to go up there, but sometimes rules didn't seem to apply to Kaladin Stormblessed.
Azure shook her head, then turned and gripped the ship railing.
He's just having a bad day, Azure, Shallan said. I think he feels anxious because his Spren is imprisoned.
Maybe. I've seen a lot of young hotheads in my time. And young Stormblessed feels like another color altogether. I wish I knew what it was he was so desperate to prove.
Shallan nodded, then glanced again at Azure's sword. You said the Honor Spren have information on your bounty?
Yeah. Berea thinks the weapon I'm chasing passed through their fortress a few years ago.
Your bounty is a weapon?
And the one who brought it to your land. A shard blade that bleeds black smoke.
Azure turned toward her.
I don't mean to be callous, Shallan. I realize you're all eager to return to your lands. I can even believe that, through some tide of fortune, Kaladin Stormblessed has foreseen some danger.
Shallan shivered.
Be wary of anyone who claims to be able to see the future.
But, Azure continued, even if his mission is critical, it doesn't mean mine isn't as well.
Shallan glanced toward the high deck, where she could faintly hear Kaladin making a disturbance. Azure turned and clasped her hands, adopting a far-off look. She seemed to want to be alone, so Shallan trailed back toward where she'd left her things. She settled down and removed the bucket from her sketchpad. The pages fluttered, showing various versions of herself, each one wrong. She kept drawing Vale's face on Radiant's body, or vice versa. She started back into her latest bucket of beads. She found a shirt and a bowl, but the next bead was a fallen tree branch. This brought up memories of the last time she'd dipped into Shadesmar, freezing, near death, on the banks of the ocean. Why hadn't she tried to soul cast since then? She'd made excuses, avoided thinking about it, had focused all her attention on light weaving. She'd ignored soul casting because she'd failed, because she was afraid. Could she invent someone who wasn't afraid? Someone new, since Vale was broken, and had been since that failure in the Kulinar market.
Shallan? Adolin asked, coming over to her.
Are you all right?
She shook herself. How long had she been sitting there?
I'm fine, she said. Just remembering.
Good things or bad?
All memories are bad, she said immediately, then looked away, blushing.
He settled down next to her. Storms, his overt concern was annoying. She didn't want him worrying about her.
Shallan, he asked.
Shallan will be fine, she said. I'll bring her back in a moment. I just have to recover her
Adolin glanced at the fluttering pages with the different versions of her. He reached out and hugged her, saying nothing, which turned out to be the right thing to say. She closed her eyes and tried to pull herself together. "Which one do you like the most?" she finally asked. "Vale is the one who wears the white outfit, but I'm having trouble with her right now. She peeks out sometimes when I don't want, but then won't come when I need her. Radiant is the one who practices with the sword. I made her prettier than the others, and you can talk to her about dueling. But some of the time I'll have to be someone who can light weave. I'm trying to think of who she should be."
Ash's eyes, Shallan.
"Shallan's broken, so I think I'm trying to hide her. Like a cracked vase, where you turn the nice side toward the room, hiding the flaw. I'm not doing it on purpose, but it's happening, and I don't know how to stop it." He held her. "No advice?" she asked, numb. "Everyone always seems to have loads."
"You're the smart one. What can I say?"
"It's confusing, being all these people. I feel like I'm presenting different faces all the time. Lying to everyone, because I'm different inside. That doesn't make sense, does it?" She squeezed her eyes shut again. "I'll pull it back together. I'll be someone." He pulled her tight again as the ship rocked.
"Shallan, I killed Sadeus."
She blinked, then pulled back and looked him in the eyes. "What?"
"I killed Sadeus," Adolin whispered. "We met in the corridors of the tower. He started insulting Father, talking about the terrible things he was going to do to us, and I couldn't listen anymore. Couldn't stand there and look at his smug red face, so I attacked him."
"So all that time we were hunting a killer?"
"It was me. I'm the one the Spren copied the first time. I kept thinking about how I was lying to you, to Father, and to everyone. The Honorable Adolin Kalin, the consummate duelist, a murderer. And, Shallan, I don't think I'm sorry. Sadeus was a monster. He repeatedly tried to get us killed. His betrayal caused the deaths of many of my friends. When I formally challenged him to a duel, he wiggled out of it. He was smarter than me, smarter than Father. He'd have won eventually. So I killed him."
He pulled her to him and took a deep breath. Shallan shivered, then whispered, "Good for you."
"Shallan? You're a Radiant. You're not supposed to condone something like this."
"I don't know what I'm supposed to do. I only know that the world is a better place for the death of Toral Sadeus.
Father wouldn't like it if he knew."
"Your father is a great man," Shallan said, "who is perhaps better off not knowing everything, for his own good." Adolin breathed in again, with her head pressed to his chest. The air moving in and out of his lungs was audible, and his voice was different, more resonant.
"Yeah,"
he said.
"Yeah, maybe. In any case, I think I know what it's like to feel like you're lying to the world. So maybe if you figure out what to do, you could tell me."
She leaned into him, listening to his heartbeat, his breathing. She felt his warmth.
"You never did say," she whispered,
"which one you prefer."
"It's obvious. I prefer the real you."
"Which one is that, though?"
"She's the one I'm talking to right now." "You don't have to hide, Shallan. You don't have to push it down. Maybe the vase is cracked, but that only means it can show what's inside. And I like what's inside."
"So warm, comfortable, and strikingly unfamiliar. What was this peace, this place without fear?"
Noises from above spoiled it.
Pulling back, she looked toward the upper deck.
"What
is the bridge boy doing up there?
Sir,
the misty sailor's friend said in broken Alethi.
Sir, not. Please, not.
Kaladin ignored her, looking through the spyglass he'd taken from the chain nearby. He stood on the rear section of the high deck, searching the sky. That fused had watched them leave Celebrant. The enemy would find them eventually. Dalinar alone, surrounded by 9 shadows. Kaladin finally handed the spyglass to the anxious Mist Spren. The captain of the ship, in a tight uniform that probably would have been uncomfortable on a human, approached and dismissed the sailor, who scuttled away.
"I would prefer," Captain Notum said, "if you would refrain from upsetting my crew."
"I would prefer that you let Syl go," Kaladin snapped, feeling her anxiety through their bond. "As I told you, the Stormfather has condoned what she did. There is no crime."
The short Spren clasped his hands behind his back. Of all the Spren they'd interacted with on this side, the Honor Spren seemed to share the most human mannerisms.
"I could lock you away again," the captain said, "or even have you tossed overboard."
"Yeah? And what would that do to Syl? She told me that losing a bonded Radiant was hard on their Spren."
"True. But she would recover, and it might be for the best. Your relationship with the ancient daughter is inappropriate."
"It's not like we eloped."
"It is worse, as the Nahel bond is far more intimate a relationship. The linking of spirits. This is not a thing that should be done lightly, unsupervised. Besides, the ancient daughter is too young."
"Young?" Kaladin said. "Didn't you just call her ancient?"
"It would be difficult to explain to a human."
"Try anyway." The captain sighed.
"The Honor Spren were created by Honor himself many thousands of years ago. You call him the Almighty, and I'm afraid he's dead."
"Which makes sense, as it's pretty much the only excuse I would have accepted."
"That wasn't levity, human," Notum said. "Your god is dead."
"Not my god.
But please, continue." "Well,"
Notum frowned. He'd obviously thought the concept of Honor's death would have been more difficult for Kaladin to accept.